please the court. I'm Thomas Michelle. No.
Well, let Deborah call the case.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Y'all could have brought us something a little easier.
It is. I'll tell you. Sit down and have a cup of tea and read some contract language and some contract clause. This is what this is. This is sitting down and just reading over it. I'll tell you.
Or some grammar books.
Exactly. Like I said, I pulled out my Strunk and White from college that I kept since 1982. Did I say 82? But I think this issue is likewise, only appellate lawyers can think this is kind of fascinating, but I do. In looking at this and even trying to understand what the two sides' arguments are, I'm gonna leap right into this one. Here we have a deed where the summary judgment record looks like there's three, they own one-thirds of the same 107 acres. And this time it's Max Weiniger, who later assigns a part of his portion to his wife. And the deed that is interest in which he sold that one-third. And as I set forth in the briefing, and as you get into this, amazing.
Let me ask you a question.
Yes, Your Honor.
Is it proper for us to consider these two cases together? Or do we have to consider them separately? Or do we have to remand this for the trial court to tell us the trial court considered them together? What is our posture here?
That is the position I've taken. I think you have to consider them independently. And that you would have to go back and remand to the trial court if the court was going to take into consideration evidence from the other either way of either proceeding. I don't know that you can do that I haven't ever seen it happen on appeal. Mr. Kelcher may have a very different opinion. But I've treated them as separately cases, and I believe the posture of the appeals so far have been as independent. I think it's only through, really, quite frankly, the courts setting these two arguments back to back and kind of the coincidence of the way they've proceeded upward and the timings. Extensions of times on briefs, things of that nature, just landed it here for the court's convenience and represented by the same counsel. But in particular, this case, I admit I learned quite a bit about this type of case law and the amazing subtleties of the differences of using a one-third mineral interest or one-third royalty or out of the lands or out of the conveyance. Talk about hyper-technicality. And I will say this as an outset. Max Weiniger, as a lay person, and maybe it's maybe a little bit of a beef I've got with of sitting back conceptually, sometimes when you're not a mineral or oil and gas lawyer, I do this a lot on property tax cases because I help my sister who does nothing but that in Austin, so I get hired on the appeals on those, and I get to have a fresh look at it because you read it differently sometimes. And that's what I say this. I found it shocking that a layperson who thought he had, clearly it's our position, you would look at the deed and say you think you've got a third. But case law says if you reserve a third of the minerals, that means you've only taken a portion of that portion. And I'm not really disputing that body of the case law, but it was quite shocking to me that any layperson sitting down there would say, this has a code to it almost, that you've got to know back in the back of your mind that really means something else. And what is interesting in this case is you've got the mineral interests. And you've got the term royalty. And so, as we've set forth in our brief, the deed conveys the mineral interest. And the language in question, obviously, it conveys his mineral interest. And we've taken some effort to distinguish the difference between, mineral interests are a bundle of sticks. And we've set them forth. There's five bundles of sticks. The right to develop, the right to lease, the right to bonus, the right to delay rentals, and the right to royalty. Interestingly, though, when they conveyed the mineral interest, which is the bundle of sticks, and I literally was about to go buy five blocks from Hobby Lobby or something to conceptualize the conveyance of all five of this particular group. They're not all the same. They're five groups. Royalties is a subset of that mineral interest that is conveyed. And the language, the cases that they cite, are if you convey your mineral interest and you reserve a third of your mineral interest, that means a ninth. But that's not what we did in this case. We conveyed our mineral interests and reserved back the royalty. And I kind of did this by example with pens and pencils.
Mr. Michelle, if that's the case, wouldn't your client have had to reserve 100% in order to get to that one-third?
I don't think so. I think you could. I think it is contract construction, Justice Walker. But I think what you do say is if you describe it, if you've got writing utensils, and you've got a different writing utensils, and you say, I'm giving you those, but it goes to the language. It goes back. How would you describe the sunset? Nobody would say, I'm going to reserve 100% of it. No, I'm reserving back the one-third royalty. I'm taking the pen back. I'm giving you writing utensils. I'm giving you five different writing utensils, but I'm reserving the blue pen. You don't say, I'm reserving all of the blue pen, because it deals with groups and subsets, and that's common language. Now, of course, it was a summary judgment, and Justice Walker, you know, you look at the deed they drafted under the declaratory judgment. They go back and said it's a third of a third. They obtained a declaratory judgment, clarifying it to say it means a ninth. I think conversely, you could argue why didn't they say it that way? But I think you've seized right on the issue, and I think that's obviously for the court to say. That obviously, as the appellate lawyer, I think neither one of us would be here if they had said a ninth. It was a ninth. If we had said 100%, I'm reserving 100%.
Or all mine.
Or all of mine. Yes, all of those could have been used. Mm-hmm. All of those could have been used. Either way.
I think that when you use words of reservation,
correct,
you can only reserve something you already own. And when you use words of reservation in a deed and you're reserving one-third of what you own, that's the trouble I'm having with your interpretation, is that it's reservation language.
It is, and I think you're right. I think if it had been a third of the minerals, you're right. But I think it literally goes to, and I've got to ask you to maybe pull back a little, like I did, because I really did sat down and studied this for a long time when I was reviewing this, and it really took me a while to think, you know, that's how you describe. Of course, in an abundance of caution, I wish Mr. Wanager had a lawyer when he was down there to do that, instruct death, those things. But when you do that, they didn't say, they could have been a model of clarity too. It said, you're only keeping a ninth, you're giving up a third of a third. They didn't do that. So we've got these two, both sides could have been clear. But I think when you look at it, when you say, I'm going to reserve back a, I think what makes this case unique, and not like any of the other cases cited, it is unique because I don't think the language was great, is that when you, it's how you describe the subset. It's like, I've got these mineral interests, and that's the name of it. I'm reserving my third back.
Right.
I guess, if they inserted all of my one-third, then that obviously would have helped. But I really do think that's what makes it unique in this case, is I'm reserving, I have five writing utensils. I'm reserving, the name of it is the highlighter. I'm reserving that one. I'm reserving the third that I've got, only of my royalties, not of all the.
So you could either say I'm reserving my one-third royalty interest, or I'm reserving one-third of my royalty interest. And it makes all the difference.
Yeah, I think what it makes part of the big difference is if you say I'm reserving
my one-third royalty interest, then that is my entire one-third royalty interest. But
in
contrast, I'm reserving one-third of my royalty interest, then you're reserving a ninth.
I'm not exactly sure about that. The distinction I was trying to make was between the mineral interest. When you reserve a third of your mineral interests,
mm-hmm.
The case law have said, pursuant to Justice Walker's discussions here this morning, were that you're only reserving a third. Mm-hmm. But what I'm saying is unique about this case, and I think it's what was presented down at the trial court and on issue before the court today, is I think it changes the playing field, or alternatively, Justice Walker, if we're going to give any meat to the Texas Supreme Court's advice, or holdings, I should say, that if this reading is susceptible to two or more reasonable interpretations, I had this discussion other days, you know, who is objective? I know this court is endowed with the authority to sit and read, but at the same time, if the court can get up there and say, and read this deed and say, I think those two readings are reasonable. You may not think it's right. You may lean towards one way, but the Supreme Court has said if it's susceptible to two or more reasonable interpretations, and with all due respect, I know I want to win on the legal arguments that it's not ambiguous, but if there's a case out there where it could be susceptible to two or more reasonable interpretations, I think we've got one here in this deed. It varies. It varies from the standard type of language that we see. It is uniquely crafted. And both sides, interestingly enough, you know, did submit extraneous evidence in support of their motions for summary judgment to try to explain what they meant.
What's your best case saying that when you convey one of these sticks of the bundles of sticks, that you apply a different...
We cited the Woods. Well, there's nothing directly on point, but I think it does help. If you look at the Woods versus Sims case, we did cite it, and we quoted it and bolded it. It does talk about that interest in royalty is not the same. This is bolded in our brief. Mm-hmm. It's not the same as mineral interest conveyed.
Right.
And then it says, accordingly, instruments may convey an interest in the royalty which is larger or smaller than the interest conveyed in the minerals. And so that's, Justice Walker, that's our best logical reading about how to interpret this language. I do not have a case that discusses the language about subsets of groups. And I really do think that's important analysis, is because it takes it out of the normal group. I think you can read, if the normal logic is, it's the problem with English language, the normal logic is if you convey a third, you can only reserve back what you have. But through the inartfulness of the English language, you use the same language to say, of the five, I'm reserving the one back. And that's the name of it. The name of what I'm reserving back is the one third. And so it's the name of the subset. Whereas I was able to use an example, if I have five different writing utensils and I got a blue pen, I can say I'm keeping the blue pen. Nobody's going to confuse it with the red pen, the green pen, the orange pen. Everybody knows I'm keeping that back. And so I think part of it is a problem with the English language. It's one reason why I wanted oral argument. And also, I think with all due respect about us all having the opportunity, you're going to get different minds. And I think it's got to be absolutely clear that that's what that means. Now, both sides did submit affidavits. And I will add, even they supplied their own affidavit. David Martin's affidavit states that, attached to his motion for summary judgment, that the Weinigers, Mr. Weiniger, desired to reserve a one-third of their minerals. And that directly conflicts with the deed, because he didn't reserve one-third of the minerals. He was confused about it. We only reserved our third of the royalties. The name of his third.
I have a question.
Yes, Your Honor.
Under your interpretation, what what do you do about the preceding sentence? It says, included in this deed and conveyed from grantor to grantee is the right to receive all royalty, except as reserved, as limited by the reservation. So under your interpretation, he's granting all royalty as one of the sticks in the bundle, and then he's taking all of that royalty back.
Correct.
Correct.
And it, like I said, it's not a model of clarity. And I've not seen this deed really used this way before. It is, I think, poorly drafted. That's why I want to win as a matter of law, and I'm still preserving that issue. But I really do think, Justice Gardner, just by raising that question, I think it's susceptible to reasonable differences of meaning. And or is ambiguous, and therefore we need conflicting evidence. And they attached, like I said, they attached their own affidavit of the party, one of the parties, who said he was reserving a third of the minerals. And that's not what he did at all. So they don't know what exactly it was saying. Would ask the court to reverse and render, holding that he reserved his entire one-third. In the alternative, we ask the court to reverse and remand this matter. And I ran out of time, and I didn't get to talk to about limitations, but maybe I'll try to get it on the reply.
All right. Thank you. David?
Yes, Your Honor. I'm going to start a little bit differently than I thought because of the questions. One of the questions was, it is important to remember that Max Winograd here is attempting to reserve every bit of royalty interest he ever owned in this land. All he owned was one-third interest, mineral interest. He could own no more than one-third royalty interest. That is what he's doing. There's a way to say that. It is not to transfer it, period and paragraph. He did, in fact, transfer it in paragraphs 1 and paragraph 2, first sentence of the deed. Then he reserved back out of that conveyance one-third. That's a ninth. There was a way to have done this, and the way to have done this was relatively simple on the face. There are five cases that control this, largely Texas Supreme Court cases, and even more importantly, cases blessed by the Supreme Court multiple times, and I want to discuss those. Before I do, one thing about the affidavit. The affidavit is just part of the of David Martin's affidavit. It also ignores Palm Peter's affidavit as well, which talked about a time contemporaneous with the transfer. It's very important. What happened is the parties had agreed to the sale of 100% of all interest in the land. In other words, all the sticks and the surface too. What happened is Ms. Winograd came back and said, no, I want to reserve some royalty interest. And they discussed that. Mr. Peters valued that. He put the royalty interest at $450 per acre. He owned, Mr. Winograd owned one-third. They calculated that as being $150 per acre. Then they calculated that if he was reserving one-third of that, it would be $50 per acre. 50 times 107 is exactly the amount that the purchase price was reduced by the royalty. So we have that evidence in the record as well. In a contract construction issue, purely contract construction, that wouldn't be admissible to interpret the deed. Now, if it's ambiguous, it would. The court didn't have any problem with that issue and interpreted it, I think, as a matter of law. Again, I think five cases control. The first case is a 1929 case from the Galveston Court of Appeals, and I know you must be thinking, you had to go back that far. Well, the reason I did is because it's one of the most cited cases in oil and gas law. It is Hooks versus Neal, which is discussed throughout our opinion. It is also a writ refused case, which is important, as the court knows. Back at that time, that gave it the opinion, the dignity of a Supreme Court opinion. The Supreme Court on three separate occasions has taken pains to say it is the law. Now, what it says, and it's very specific, is if a fraction of the grantor's interest is reserved out of a conveyance, you have a fraction. So you calculate the fraction reserved out of the interest conveyed. One-third interest was conveyed here. A reservation of interest of one-third equals one-ninth. They don't seriously question Hooks or that Hooks was badly decided. They say a couple of things we'll talk about in a minute that it doesn't apply. But it certainly applies in Fort Worth. Chief Justice McDonald in 1949 had almost the identical facts of both this case and also Hooks before him and another writ refused case, and again, in our brief as well. What happened in that case was there was a conveyance of 14/16 of the property. Two of the miners who owned some of the property didn't join the conveyance, and one half of the mineral interest were conveyed. And the court said, nope, that's a fraction. You multiply that, and 7/16 is what is reserved. Now, can there be a different result? There can. And the King versus Wichita Falls, First National Bank of Wichita Falls, deals with that. That is really the case that the Winograds rely on. In that case, the Supreme Court, again, it is actually It is after the Hooks versus Neal case, and the Supreme Court recognized Hooks versus Neal being right in reservations out of lands conveyed. But in that case, the language was different. And what happened is they transferred, they described the fraction out of the land and described the land. Well, in that case, if I'm reserving out of Blackacre one-third mineral interest, that's what we're doing. We don't have a conveyance from which to reserve it. The distinction, if there was ever any doubt about this, in Middleton versus Broussard, which is a 74 Texas Supreme Court case, that distinction was made and discussed in detail by the Supreme Court. And they said there's a distinction. When you reserve out of a conveyance, you do a fraction. When you do it out of land described, that is a different kind of situation. And there's a reason for that. If you're reserving out of a conveyance, it's got to be times the land you own, especially true here, where these are tenants in common, and they own only a portion, although it's undivided, they own a portion of the interest in the entire property. Now, the Winogers really take on this case in not saying that Hooks doesn't apply. What they say, or it doesn't say that. What they really say is it doesn't apply for two reasons. This is going to be the first time you hear our response to that, because that issue was not raised until their reply brief, and this is important. The first thing they say is, and Mr. Michel made a mention of that, that there's a difference between mineral interest and royalty. Absolutely true. There's no doubt that he's right about that. The issue is what he says, and says in the brief three times, is that Hooks doesn't apply when there is a transfer of the mineral interest and a royalty interest is reserved. That's wrong. Why can I tell you that with such confidence? Texas courts have looked at that. That is the Clack versus Garcia case. We cite it in our brief, but not for this proposition, because this didn't come in until the reply brief. In Clack versus Garcia, and by the way, it was decided by Jack Pope when Chief Justice Pope was on the San Antonio Court of Appeals before he went to the Supreme Court. But as this court knows, Justice Pope wrote a lot of the important oil and gas decisions of his day. There what happened was there was a transfer of a 1/16th mineral interest and a reservation of a 1/16th royalty, exactly our situation here. And Justice Pope, in a one-page opinion, just says this, Hooks versus Neal, 1/16th times 1/16th transferred 1/256 royalty interest. So I think that that legal proposition is out. The second thing they say is the deed really doesn't reserve out of the conveyance. It instead does something different, and they cite the Averett case. It says that it really transfers land irrespective of the conveyance. Don't think that's a fair interpretation of the deed. But Averett is the Supreme Court case that also looked at Hooks versus Neal, and here's what they said. And when Mr. Sanders told me about this, I told him, Jody, you can't be right. It can't be that magic words are important, but doggone it, he forced me to read it in greater detail than I had, and on the third read, I realized that Jody was right, I was wrong. What the Averett court says is, if you use the term lands described to qualify your interest, then the fraction doesn't apply and the multiplication doesn't. But if you reserve out of the conveyance that you have made, the opposite is true, and Hooks versus Neal applied. So I think that it's very clear that under this case, Hooks versus Neal applies. The fraction is the appropriate way to do it. I think the evidence at the trial court, and by the way, there was evidence the other way as well. I'm not trying to suggest there's not. The next thing I think that is terribly important is both of us talk about the rules of construction, and as we all know, for every rule of construction, there is an opposite one that seems to cut the other way. And I'm not going to get into great detail about this. At page 11 and 12 of our brief, really from 10 to 12, there is a discussion about how we believe the Weiniger's reading makes some of the language superfluous. Justice Gardner, it touches on the question that you ask about did he transfer the royalty. They say that isn't an important line. And the reason they say that is, once again, the royalty is a different issue than the minerals, and that's not terribly important. Again, If that's right, Chief Justice Pope was wrong in Clack. And Clack has never been overruled. It is always, in these kinds of interests, royalties are generally the part of the mineral interest that are reserved. Generally, mineral interests are not, although in this day and time that's changing. Remember, Max Winograd intended, what he's telling the court now is, 100% of the royalty interest, all I ever owned, I intended to reserve. Easy thing to do, it just did not happen here. When you look at the deed, and we've given you a handout, and the reason I did this was both the deed, and this is actually I'm looking at tab B, both the deed in this case and the portions of the divorce decree weren't put really together in the entire brief, and I thought it was important for the court to have it together. Here's the way I read this. Paragraph 1 transfers everything, the entire bundle of sticks and the surface. First sentence of paragraph 2 transfers all the mineral interest and all other rights to the minerals, including the royalty. I think that destroys the Winograd's position. Then the next sentence, out of the undivided mineral interest conveyed, the exact language in Hooks, grantor reserves himself the one-third royalty. Since it's reserved out of the grant, I think that is takes care of the issue under Hooks. The statute of limitations, Thomas didn't get to, and I'll cover it very briefly. This is one of those horrible things when you look at it, you don't know exactly what to do. The trial court granted the motions for summary judgment, did not specify any of the reasons for granting it. In the decree itself, the court grants us the relief we ask for in terms of the declarations. So to say that the declarations in the decretal part did not deal with the statute of limitations, I think, is incorrect. He granted us the only thing that we had prayed for, and he would have had to have decided the statute of limitations. In the letter the court sent out that actually, the interesting thing, the parties had before the divorce case, by about a week and a half, it was fresh on everybody's mind in that case, but it was Judge Walton's letter said he had granted the motion in its entirety. They say, no, he didn't do that, and the statute of limitations is not part of this case. Difficult, I don't want to be too harsh on this, it is difficult to tell. The finality clause under Lehman would have indicated that those were taken care of. But let's assume that he ruled on that. The four-year statute of limitations applies to both quiet title and reformation. There's no doubt about that. The quiet title stuff, we had to dig pretty far to find out what the statute of limitations is. But the most important thing is what they say is the discovery rule applies, and as a result, the statute of limitations never began to run until they got a division order. Here are the facts on that, and they are undisputed. What happened is the property leased to Quicksilver. Quicksilver hit gas. That started this entire controversy rolling. What happened is they then sent out division orders, and in the division orders for Mr. Winograd, they figured like he did, without any input from us, and that's also undisputed, that reading the deed that he owned 1/9. That's when he filed this lawsuit. Well, the truth of the matter is it wasn't inherently undiscoverable, as the Supreme Court says, because these were all matters of public record. And as the court has said in Ford versus Exxon, once it's in the public record, the you don't apply the discovery rule. The Leslie case out of the Eastland Court of Appeals that we cite to you by Terry McCall is instructive. It's directly on point in reformation in this kind of dispute. I must tell you that that case is now writ pending at the Supreme Court. Writ hadn't been acted on at all or additional briefing, but that was not in our efforts below. There are also no evidence motions for summary judgment on the other things that they pled in mutual mistake. There wasn't a mutual mistake on the same mistake made. Both parties looked at this thing a different way. Also on quasi-estoppel, we didn't move on quasi-estoppel. They raised it in response to our motion for summary judgment. The court had to decide that one, and one of the issues of that issue is whether we had taken one position at one time and changed to another, and there's certainly no indication we did that. And, in fact, all the contemporaneous evidence on our side was that we always thought it was one-third of one-third, or, in other words, one-ninth. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Thomas?
Interestingly enough, they submitted evidence to try to show how they came up with the calculations for the amount of the reservation. And Mr. Peter testified was as to what he thought a value of the acreage was worth. And if you divide that by one-third, that's $150 an acre. That's what the summary sheet indicated. So it looks even from that, from Mr. Weiniger, based on those summary sheets and the notes that he had, that he was keeping his one-third because his price was being reduced by a third. Also, with regard to the drafting of this, I think it's clear from the evidence that was attached that Mr. Weiniger did not draft this, so the construction needs to be construed against the drafter, not Mr. Weiniger. With regard to limitations, we cited a line of cases in there dealing with declaratory judgment actions, which I think is intuitive to me, which I thought had to be the law when I thought about this, but if you had a property line dispute or a deed dispute that never came arise, that's why you file declaratory judgment actions, to clarify the meaning of that. And we cited those line of cases, and interestingly enough, those were in our opening briefs. They really did not respond at all to those line of cases at all. The only thing they addressed was the application of the discovery rule in reformation cases. My reading of the record was the trial judge probably intended to grant on limitations, but I don't think it's in the order. Certainly his letter ruling appears to state that he did it, but the final judgment does not grant it and grants them the relief. With regard to language, you know, we attached the email exchange between Mark Kalpakakis and David Martin, where he was talking about reserving the executive rights and to provide a one-third in future royalties. That's not particularly clear. I can read that in several different ways as well. I don't know who was reserving a third on that. With regard to the lines of cases, and Justice Walker, we did cite in our reply brief the Averett versus Grande case, in which it talks about the lands above described. That's a Texas Supreme Court case. I actually put the excerpts of the opinion in the excerpts of our language for direct comparison on page 3 to see if those paragraphs are distinguishable. I don't know that they are. In some justices of the court, we would request at the very least that the court take a look at this and understand the context of when these deeds were written and how they were signed, and also to look on both sides, could have put in clearer language. But I honestly, when you sit back and look at that and they reserve back a third, his third, it is a description of the subset of the mineral interest. And with that, I'm not saying, Justice Gardner, you have to necessarily agree with that interpretation, but if you think reasonable minds could be reasonable in that interpretation, I think that's remand and a trial on the issue.
I have a question on that, because it seems like we have to apply the rules of construction from the case law to the deeds, because otherwise it seems like every single one would be ambiguous if we just did a reasonable person, if we just looked at every deed as a reasonable person would, every single deed would be ambiguous.
No, I think you're right, Your Honor. I think, Justice Walker, you're exactly right about that, applying the rules of construction to the deed. And I think that's right. We're hampered by that, and we're benefited by that. But, you've got to construe it favorably to us if it's drafted by them. But I think it's not that simple. I mean, I don't think if you take the rules of construction and the history of the case law, and whether you call it code language for reasonable, experienced practitioners in the oil and gas industry, I understand that. But that's not really what I'm asking. I'm not just saying you could ever read a contract and always find it ambiguous. I don't think that's true. I think a lot of contracts are quite clear. Payments due on April 1st. You know,
yeah, the rent is due. I just don't think we see those contracts.
That's right. Because the only ones that come up to you are the ones that they are fighting over the provisions. That you're exactly right. Believe me, there are transactions. I also do, believe it or not, I've got diverse practice. I do a lot of landlord-tenant law, but I do just only on commercial buildings. I represent a major multi-billion-dollar pension fund, and so I do a lot of landlord-tenant, and I have hundreds and hundreds of leases that we do litigation on. And those, to this day, nobody has pled ambiguity on a lease, on rent was due, was reasonable notice given, are you in default? So I think generically we're not talking about 99% of the contracts. We're talking the contracts that come down there. And if no offense, you sit down, you take the rules of construction, you read that paragraph. I've read that paragraph 50 times. And the problem I keep coming back to is if you read it to mean it's the subset, he keeps his third. If you read it to apply the third of a third, it's the ninth. I honestly think when you sit back and apply the rules of construction construed against them, I think that's a fact question. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Your case is submitted. We do appreciate your coming in to argue today. It's been very helpful. As you pointed out, these are not easy cases, so thank you for your assistance. We'll be in recess briefly. You are excused to go about your business if you'd like to.